Yo, what's up? What's going on, everybody? This is the Boxing Source here, and this is the bonus podcast here, following up for what we had on Sunday. On Sunday, we pretty much had a very extensive conversation about the main event that happened over in the T-Mobile Arena, as you had Tyson Fury defeating Deontay Wilder by knockout in the 11th round. And of course, you know, we'll probably have a lot more conversation about that over in the following weeks. But wanted to get into a few other news and notes in the boxing world. Of course, you had the undercard fights that took place over there at the T-Mobile Arena. Plus, wanted to touch in to what also happened over in Liverpool, so to speak. So just going to run through all that and you know, just have a little bit of thoughts on a couple of these fights that did take place on Saturday night. Just going back to the T-Mobile Arena, I would pretty much start at the lead-in to the pay-per-view for Fury Wilder 3. As you had two fights that were, you know, pretty much featured there, with Julian Williams going up against Vladimir Hernandez. And you also had Edgar Berlanga versus Marcelo Esteban Coceres. And in the fight between Julian Williams and Vladimir Hernandez, of course, Julian J-Rock Williams, former unified champion in the super welterweight division, going up against Vladimir Hernandez, with Vladimir Hernandez having a record of 12-4. Julian Williams with his first fight back since his loss that did take place in Philadelphia when he lost the super welterweight titles to Jason Rosario. And there had been, you know, a lot going on with J-Rock after that particular fight. You know, he had his, you know, little issues with his longtime trainer, Steven Bretman Edwards. He was, you know, originally scheduled to be part of the pay-per-view for Tank Davis versus Mario Barrios over in Atlanta, but he suffered a shoulder injury that took him out of that fight card. So he was added to this one here against Vladimir Hernandez. And this one was kind of, you know, a little bit, it was supposed to be pretty much in that super welterweight division, but Julian Williams did come into the weigh-in with the weight of 156.5 pounds. So they pretty much, you know, went ahead and kind of like approved this to be a middleweight fight of sorts. But against Vladimir Hernandez, we tried to see if, you know, Julian Williams was going to be, you know, back and, you know, see if he would be able to get himself in the gear, be sharp, be calculated, and also see if he was, you know, good as far as like being able to throw shots and take shots. Notably, before this fight, you know, kind of like was put together, he did reunite with his trainer, Steven Bretman Edwards, to prepare for this fight and kind of like continue himself on the path for the rest of his professional career. And so he, you know, got in there against Vladimir Hernandez, had a pretty good start, was looking sharp going up against Hernandez, who, you know, came in there with a southpaw stance. So you had an orthodox fighter in J-Rock Williams against the southpaw, Vladimir Hernandez. And, you know, he was able to, you know, kind of like get a good few lead right hands in Vladimir Hernandez very early in this fight. First few rounds, you kind of like saw J-Rock Williams landing that right hand, stopping the motivation there, or the momentum of Vladimir Hernandez, and, you know, kind of like scoring good rounds there for J-Rock. But as, you know, the rounds went on, you kind of like seen the pace of Julian Williams pretty much stay the same. But with Vladimir Hernandez, you know, Hernandez is known for being a high-volume puncher. And if he, you know, gets to the inside, then he's going to throw a lot of punches on the inside. But also, while he's coming forward, he's going to try to open up in order to get more offense once he gets up close. And so in the, you know, coming rounds, you kind of seen Julian Williams kind of tired down a little bit, particularly with the success of Vladimir Hernandez, you know, landing shots to the body. And so what he was able to do was he was able to, you know, get some shots into the body, minimize the activity of Julian Williams. And then you kind of like saw in the, you know, the tail end of the fight that Vladimir Hernandez was able to land a lot more shots on Julian Williams. And particularly in the 7th, 8th, and 9th rounds, you kind of saw Vladimir Hernandez coming forward, throwing punches and bunches, getting, you know, Julian Williams in trouble a lot, where Julian Williams really didn't throw much to try to get Hernandez off of him, you know. And so that amount of offense that Vladimir Hernandez got in those, you know, last few rounds pretty much gave him the major advantage in that second half of the fight. This fight went 10 rounds, and in the 10-round fight, going to the scorecards, you had scores of 6-4 for Julian Williams from Lisa Ciampa. You had 6-4 score from John McKay for Vladimir Hernandez. And then David Sutherland was the deciding judge, giving 7 rounds to Vladimir Hernandez for Vladimir Hernandez to score an upset of sorts over Julian Williams and give Julian Williams his second consecutive loss. For those that kind of like watched the fight live, you probably didn't see 7 rounds clearly for Vladimir Hernandez. I would have probably been, you know, more inclined to, you know, either have it a draw or probably give, you know, the fight to Julian Williams. But Vladimir Hernandez, you know, with his overall activity and come forward style, was the difference here in this. And so he's kind of like riding a 3-fight win streak after, you know, his last loss that was back in 2019. So he had defeated Alfredo Angulo in his last fight, which took place last year. And now he has a win over Julian J-Rock Williams there. So I think that's, and that's a, you know, that's a pretty interesting thing here, given that, you know, Vladimir Hernandez had been floating around over 160 in his past few fights and then went back down to around under 154 pounds to fight Julian J-Rock Williams. And he was able to defeat Julian Williams here with its decision victory. He now has 13 wins with 4 losses on his record. And now Julian Williams, with a second consecutive loss, now has a record of 27 wins, 3 losses, and 1 draw. And so I think that is going to be really interesting to see what happens here with Julian Williams, being a former unified champion, of course, scoring his big win over Jared Hurd a couple of years ago in Virginia. But, you know, after that, losing by knockout to Jason Rosario in Philadelphia. And now this is his second consecutive loss. And, you know, I would like to see how things go within the next few weeks, particularly when, you, like I said, Julian Williams was able to, you know, get back there in the ring with Steven Edwards. And I would like to know if that particular, you know, relationship, you know, had completely patched up, or if it was still, you know, in the works there, you know, before this particular fight. But I was just, you know, really surprised that Vladimir Hernandez was able to pull off that win. Now, moving forward, you had the chosen one at super middleweight there, Edgar Berlanga. Of course, he had a record of 17 wins, 16 wins by way of knockout. Course, he had that streak of 16 wins there, where he was able to, you know, get pretty much most of those wins by knockout within the first round. So he had a whole bunch of first round knockouts until he had to fight against Damon Nicholson earlier this year, which did go a full 8 rounds. And then he stepped up to go up against Marcelo Esteban Coceres, pretty much a veteran in the game, had been in the game for about 9 years, over 30 professional fights with 30 wins, with just a couple of losses there with one draw. But, you know, someone who had faced the likes of like Billy Joe Saunders, you know, back in 2019 for the WBO Super Middleweight Championship, but then had a couple of fights after that, and then was over here to face the chosen one, so to speak, right? And so, you know, people wanted to see if, you know, maybe you would have, you know, Edgar Berlanga get back to his knockout ways. But we kind of like saw that there were a few things that he definitely needed to work on, as far as like completing himself, completing combinations, not throwing just, you know, one shot at a time, being able to weather the so-called storm there from Coceres. Coceres is a very rugged fighter there. Like I said, over 30 fights, only had been stopped once there, and I think that was from the Billy Joe Saunders fight. But, you know, outside of that, he, you know, had a, you know, few multiple fights coming from Argentina. That's basically, you know, where he, you know, comes from. But now, actually, he was like, you know, having, I think, what is this is, looked like it was like his second fight over in the States, as he did actually fight Billy Joe Saunders in the States, there for that WBO super middleweight title at the time. But, you know, here going up against Edgar Berlanga, we wanted to see if Berlanga was going to be able to work and break down his opponent and then eventually take out his opponent, whether it would have been in the first round or later on in the fight. But, you know, what I kind of like saw in that fight was, you know, yeah, you did see Berlanga winning rounds, but, you know, with Coceres, you know, still being right there in front of him, you know, he was tough, rugged. There were times when it seemed like Coceres was in trouble, but he would be able to answer and get right back. And you kind of like seeing things change up a little bit there in the eighth round, where you've seen signs of Berlanga kind of like wearing down a little bit. And then you saw in the ninth round, when they were in close quarters, that Berlanga got caught. And then when he got caught with a good shot, the momentum took him down to the canvas. And so he went down to the canvas for the first time in his career. And when he went down to the canvas, you seen immediately, you know, he kind of like hit his chest with, you know, both of his hands, knowing that he messed up. He wasn't really hurt, but he was just, you know, frustrated that he left himself open to get caught with a good shot. And, you know, when people saw that live, they were like, oh, snap, man. Like, Berlanga, you know, got dropped there against Coceres. But he was able to, you know, go through the full 10 rounds. Did win 6 of those rounds, or basically, yeah, pretty much like 6-7 of those rounds, I would say 7 rounds. But with the knockdown, you know, it kind of like takes a point away. So he got straight scores of 96-93 from all 3 judges for him to get the unanimous decision win. And he is now 18-0 there in the super middleweight division. And, you know, I think after this particular fight, you probably would see a few more people want to see if they could try their luck there against Edgar Berlanga. But I kind of like see, you know, Berlanga being matched pretty well going into 2022 and his next couple fights in 2022, that, you know, he'll kind of like to see if he could get a few more fights in to work on his craft a little bit more before he, you know, goes up against the higher rated fighters there in the super middleweight division. I think I've kind of like spoke on a little bit in the past that you had guys like, you know, King Steven Nelson and guys like Jesse Hart that have been, you know, looking at Edgar Berlanga while he did have his knockout streak and were saying, hey, yo, let me go ahead and, you know, step up there and fight, you know, Edgar Berlanga. But I think that they're going to kind of like ease up on the opponents there for Edgar Berlanga a little bit, build him up a little bit more before he goes up against guys the likes of like Jesse Hart and Steven Nelson. So we got to wait on that there a little bit. More on, you know, what was happening before that, you know, pay-per-view presentation. Of course, we had Bruce Shushu Carrington, who was, you know, someone that I had an interview with, you know, a couple months ago before his pro debut. He had his first pro fight against Cesar Cantu, and he was able to get a unanimous decision win, was able to get a shutout, showed a few good things in reference to offense, was fairly sharp, particularly in the first couple of rounds there before, you know, closing things out in the last two. You know, wasn't really in much trouble there against Cesar Cantu, but was able to get, you know, a few good things in there, particularly in the first couple of rounds where he was sharp and he was fairly quick there. So y'all, you know, watch out for Bruce Carrington there in the featherweight division. Of course, you know, he was really, 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 really good amateur there before being able to go into the pro ranks. So we'll probably get more from Bruce Carrington later on down the line, you know, here after, you know, him having his first professional fight. You also did have Robeson Ramirez going up against Orlando Ruiz. Of course, Robeson Ramirez, former Olympic gold medalist, the man in the Olympics that did defeat Shakur Stevenson in the Olympics to win the gold medal. Going up against Orlando Gonzalez Ruiz. Ruiz was there at 17-0, and Robeson Ramirez was coming into this fight with a record of 7-1. Of course, he lost his professional debut back in 2019, but has been able to get a string of victories since. And here against Orlando Ruiz, it was, you know, a good little bit of a scrap there for those first few rounds, but you kind of like seeing Robeson Ramirez getting the better of Ruiz on multiple occasions in the second half of the fight. And you did kind of like see Robeson Ramirez get the better of Orlando Ruiz over the course of 10 rounds. Scored the unanimous decision win. Had two scores of 9-1 and one score of 7-3. Therefore, Robeson Ramirez. So now he is 8-1 and handing Orlando Ruiz his first pro loss. So that was pretty much majorly what happened there in the pretty much before the pay-per-view portion of this fight card. So you did have that, and we'll get into the three other fights that were part of that pay-per-view of Fury Wilder 3 here in a bit. But we will be back here in just a minute with, you know, a little bit of a message before we get back into it. All right, back here with the bonus Boxing Source radio show report here as we follow up on the action that did take place on Saturday night. Wanted to get into that pay-per-view portion of the Fury Wilder 3 card, which started off with the heavyweight bout between Jared Anderson and Vladimir Tereshkin. Jared Anderson, who they call the real big baby, coming out of Ohio, now pretty much residing in Houston, Texas, came in there with a record of 9-0, there with 9 knockouts. Of course, had a fairly extensive amateur career Now, you know, coming in here as a pro and as heavyweight against Vladimir Tereshkin, who had a record coming in there with 22 wins, 0 losses, and 1 draw. He had 12 knockouts to his credit. He had his last fight there against Francisco Salvins, who was a unbeaten fighter at 23-0, but was able to stop Francisco Salvins within four rounds or so. But he was in there against a higher caliber opponent there in Jared Anderson. And Jared Anderson pretty much easily dispatched of Vladimir Tereshkin there. He was able to land a lot of big shots in the first round. And then in the second round, you see more of those big shots coming there from Jared Anderson, backing up Vladimir Tereshkin to the corner. And he was able to land a few shots there on Tereshkin in the corner. And the referee, Kenny Bayless, stepped in to stop the fight there pretty much with, not that much time left there in the second round. As you had Jared Anderson being able to score the victory there by technical knockout. So he is now 10 wins, 0 losses, 10 knockouts, 10 knockouts and stoppages. And, you know, we've had, you know, his head trainer there, Coach Derry Riley. You know, he's kind of like saying that he's bringing along Jared Anderson up in the heavyweight ranks fairly slowly. Jared Anderson had, you know, been a very notable amateur fighter, and that has kind of like translated very well into the heavyweight division. For those that, you know, kind of like follow, you know, the boxing scene and whatnot, you know, they had, of course, the rumblings about what Jared Anderson was doing in the camp there in preparation for this particular bout. But, you know, he had also been training against other heavyweights, you know, during the course of his professional career, and kind of like really getting the better of a lot of these featherweights that have had more pro experience than Jared Anderson. So people are kind of like viewing Jared Anderson as one of those guys to look at here within the next couple of years to seriously contend for a heavyweight championship. But he was able to, you know, quickly dispatch of Vladimir Tereshkin in that first bout of the pay-per-view portion of Fury Wilder 3 there. So, yes, he is now 10-0. And that was something there for those that wanted to, you know, kind of like find or look at Jared Anderson, as he was able to score up against a guy that had a little bit more pro experience but wasn't really as, you know, I would say as well skilled as a Jared Anderson is, right? So now we will see what Jared Anderson does sometime next year and see what his next fight is going to be. But you might be able to get a little bit more on that later on down the line. The next fight that was on the pay-per-view portion of the card was the rematch between Robert Helenius and Adam Kownacki. Of course, you had the fight that did take place at the Barclays Center in March of last year, where Adam Kownacki came in there with a record of 20-0, had a lot of momentum. He was kind of like viewed as one person that could potentially fight for a world title. And some kind of like felt like he could have fought for the WBC heavyweight title before the events that did take place in 2020. But going up against Robert Helenius in that first fight, he ran into somebody that could take his punches, and he wasn't able to take Robert Helenius' punches. So he had been knocked down once And then Robert Hellenius continued to put the paws to Adam Kalnacki there at the Barclays Center and handed Adam Kalnacki the first loss of his professional career. And so they kind of like really delayed the momentum for Adam Kalnacki. But they wanted to see if they could just have this fight here once again to see if Adam Kalnacki could rebound from that particular loss against Robert Hellenius, the Nordic Nightmare, as his nickname is. But, man, the first round, oh, man, I'm sorry, guys, but, yo, you kind of like seen that Adam Kalnacki was no match for Robert Hellenius, and we kind of like saw that from the first round, man. I mean, Robert Hellenius, to me, was pretty much playing with him. He was playing with him, man. I'm going to be straight up. He was playing with him. Because I felt like Robert Hellenius, if he wanted to, he could have taken Adam Kalnacki out within two rounds. Because he was landing a whole lot of shots within those first two rounds. And he was hurting Adam Kalnacki. He was just getting them bam, bam, bam. You know? And two-piece. He was two-piecing them up. I'm going to be just straight up. He was two-piecing them up. There within those first couple of rounds. And, you know, yeah, I know that, you know, he wasn't able to drop Adam Kalnacki this time around. But, man, he was just eating some, you know, knuckle sandwiches. I'm being real. He was eating knuckle sandwiches. And Adam Kalnacki really couldn't do that much to Robert Hellenius. You did kind of like see instances where Kalnacki did kind of like hit Hellenius low. And some people may have thought that maybe, you know, Kalnacki tried to get himself out of that fight that way. But it ended up being a TKO stoppage victory for Robert Hellenius. And now he is 31-3. And handing Adam Kalnacki his second consecutive loss. I mean, I think that was probably, you know, one of Hellenius's better fights that he's had in his pro career. Of course, he's, you know, gone up against the likes of Johan Duhapas, Dillon White, Gerald Washington, where he suffered losses to. But here, this could, you know, definitely propel him for a, you know, higher profile fight. You know, I've kind of like suggested that Robert Hellenius could be a potential opponent for a former world champion next year. But we'll have to see how that will kind of like turn out there, as you do have Robert Hellenius, who is, you know, now kind of like floating around there in the mid 10s or 20s in the heavyweight division, as far as like those contenders in the heavyweight division, while the top part of the heavyweight division has been sorting itself out here over the past few weeks going into what may happen next year. But Robert Hellenius will be going into 2022 with the momentum of this TKO victory over Adam Kalnacki. Two TKO victories over Adam Kalnacki there for him to kind of like be one of those contenders to look out for in the heavyweight division next year. Moving forward, this was the cold feature bout to Fury Wilder 3. It was two undefeated fighters, Efe Ajagba and Frank Sanchez. Efe Ajagba was coming in there 15-0. Frank Sanchez there 18-0. You know, of course, some people kind of like make a little bit of jokes here and there about Frank Sanchez in reference to, you know, him being 29 years old. But that's neither here nor there. But, you know, this particular fight, you know, I kind of like said, you know, ahead of this fight, that I favor Frank Sanchez, you know, not, you know, just because, you know, he's part of the, you know, quote-unquote Canelo team and, you know, Eddie Reynoso's his head trainer and things like that. But I really didn't feel like, Efe Ajagba was, that much of a complete fighter as of yet. I mean, I know that Efe Ajagba, was looking forward to this particular fight. He's there with a, a reach of 85, 6 foot six, tall guy. But, what I've been seeing over the course of, Ajagba's career was that, he kind of like had himself to the point where he would open himself up to a lot of shots. And that, he's been in trouble in a few fights, but was able to pull out of those. But here against a guy with the skill level of Frank Sanchez, he really couldn't get himself to the point where he could adjust to what Frank Sanchez was doing. And you kind of like seen that over the course of this particular fight. If, some people were able to get through this whole fight, it wasn't really, aesthetically pleasing to a lot of people. Frank Sanchez, was kind of like, some would say economical, others would say not really throwing that much at all. But when he was throwing, sometimes he was landing. He did score, in quote, score a knockdown in round seven. But the thing about it was is that, Ajagba was a little bit of trouble. Was stumbling around, ended up being down on one knee, and then Frank Sanchez hit him with a hook bomb, and then you saw Ajagba go down, but he was not able to really adjust very well to what Frank Sanchez was doing, and it ended up being a unanimous decision victory there for Frank Sanchez. So Frank Sanchez stays undefeated. He's there at 19-0. Had the scores of, two scores of 98-91, one score of 97-92. Eight rounds to two, or, seven rounds to three. Sounds about right. I hadn't really been, like I said, I hadn't really been all too impressed with Efe Ajagba up to this particular point. He's going to have to work on a little bit more, in a sense. But that kind of like goes into a couple of things here as far as like his overall preparation. I may have to talk with a few people in reference to that because, one of the guys that was in the camp is someone that, I know over in the Washington, D.C. area. So I'm going to have to, chat with him a little bit and talk to him about this thing here with Efe Ajagba and whatnot. But also goes to the trainer of Efe Ajagba, as I hadn't really been too fond of what he's been able to do with a few professional fighters. So that's going to be one thing to, kind of like look at as far as like this particular trainer, which if y'all, look into who trains Ajagba, he trains a few other fighters as well and over the course of the past, I would say year and a half, when it comes to like a few higher profile fights, they hadn't been doing that well at all. So that's a cause for concern for this trainer. Won't necessarily name him just yet, but maybe I'll kind of like disclose that down the line. But that, kind of like covers, what happened there in T-Mobile Arena on October 9th. Of course, it was headlined by Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder, where Tyson Fury scored the 11th round knockout victory over Deontay Wilder to retain the WBC Heavyweight Championship. Of course, he had Deontay Wilder get knocked down in round three, was able to respond to score two knockdowns in round four, but then did get knocked down in round 10, and then the final knocked down in round 11, which kind of like reminded me of Klitschko versus Brock when Klitschko, you know, hit Calvin Brock, and Brock was pretty much like out on his feet before he hit the canvas. And the canvas kind of like woke him up a little bit, because, you know, by the time, you know, Brock hit that canvas, like, it kind of like woke him up a little bit. But when he got hit with that shot, he was out. And when I saw Tyson Fury hit Deontay Wilder with that right hand, when Wilder was on the ropes, you seen Deontay Wilder just go down, and he was pretty much out before he hit the canvas there. But Tyson Fury, still undefeated, you know, with 31 wins on his record there. And that's a, you know, a real big win for him, and we're going to see what happens next for him, particularly given that you have the, you know, rematch scheduled between Alexander Usyk and Anthony Joshua for the other titles that, you know, they're kind of like planning for, you know, either February or March. And then the winner of that would be able to go forward to face Tyson Fury for the undisputed heavyweight championship. Now, to kind of like look at what had been going on in Liverpool over in the UK, you did have a few fights that were, you know, kind of like talked about in boxing circles. One of them was Shannon Courtenay versus Jamie Mitchell. That was for the WBA Bantamweight Championship. Shannon Courtenay, you know, in a way, had been kind of like one of those, you know, fighters that people were kind of leaning towards and favoring and all of that. But for those that were kind of like studying Shannon Courtenay, they really felt like she wasn't all the way there as far as like skill level is concerned. She did have that, you know, loss to Rachel Ball last year in a pretty close bout. She was able to have the fight against Ebony Bridges earlier this year for her to win that WBA Bantamweight Championship, but then was able to face Jamie Mitchell here in the Echo Arena in Liverpool. Jamie Mitchell was just one that was really down to scrap. But before the fight, we saw that Shannon Courtenay at the weigh-in was not able to make weight. So she was, you know, basically stripped of the Bantamweight title before the fight even took place. It was only on the line for Jamie Mitchell to win. And she was able to get it done, getting a score of 7-3 and a score of 6-4. Jesus Garcia was one judge that scored the fight even. But now you have a, you know, a new Bantamweight champion there in Jamie Mitchell. Will there be a rematch? Probably, if Jamie Mitchell was not the mandatory contender. But, I mean, we're going to see about that, because, like, to be honest, I don't even think Shannon Courtenay would be able to beat Jamie Mitchell in a rematch. So there's that. Now, you also had Ted Cheeseman against Troy Williamson, with Troy Williamson being able to score a TKO victory in the 10th round over Ted Cheeseman with a, you know, finishing left hook by Troy Williamson to take out Ted Cheeseman. Had Troy Williamson still undefeated now, 17-0, and Ted Cheeseman, who is, you know, kind of like one of those fan favorites, so to speak, there over in the UK, is now 17 wins, 3 losses, and 1 draw. So that, I don't know what the cheese is going to be able to do. What they call him the big cheese, but I don't know what it's going to be able to do after this one. But big win scored there by Troy Williamson for him to, you know, kind of like move forward there in the super welterweight division. So they'll, you know, kind of like see if they could get more things there out there for Troy Williamson, which could be the winner of the grudge, this little grudge match is, you know, local rivalry here that happened in the main event. Liam Beefy Smith against Anthony Fowler, which was for a minor super welterweight championship. You did have Anthony Fowler that did come in there with this international super welterweight championship. He had a record of, you know, 15 wins and one loss there. And of course, Liam Beefy Smith, the, you know, well-experienced fighter there, came in there with a record of 29 wins, 3 losses, and 1 draw. Had a loss to Magomed Kurbanov a few months earlier over in Ekaterinburg, Russia. But he was going in there against Anthony Fowler as the much more experienced fighter. And you kind of like seeing that over the course of this fight. And yeah, it was a good little scrap between these two fighters. But over in the fifth round, you did have, you know, Anthony Fowler being knocked down. And then in the eighth round, you seen Liam Smith kind of like show the amount of experience that he had in comparison to Anthony Fowler. And he finished him off with what I felt was like a beautiful series of left hooks. He had 3 left hooks. I think it was like 2 to the body and then 1 upstairs. Bam! And was able to knock down Anthony Fowler. And you kind of like seeing Anthony Fowler was, you know, at that point outclassed and just didn't have, you know, the energy to really get himself back in the fight. And, you know, the referee there, Howard Foster, stopped the bout for Liam Beefy Smith to get that win. And, you know, now he goes to 30 wins, 3 losses, and 1 draw. So was a good overall performance there from Liam Smith for him to, you know, go ahead and get the victory there over Anthony Fowler in a local, like I said, a local rivalry there. Both guys from Liverpool, both guys from, you know, different sections of Liverpool going at each other. And that's what, you know, folks expected. But, you know, with Liam Smith having the overall better fight experience, you just saw a different skill class coming there from Liam Smith in this particular instance. So that kind of like covers that, you know, series of events there. Just wanted to go ahead and touch on, you know, those other fights. Is, you know, we really broke down Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder in depth and got various thoughts about what happened in that particular fight in the regular section of the podcast. But here in this bonus, just wanted to go over and review what happened in the undercard of Fury Wilder 3 and also touch on a couple of fights that did happen over in Liverpool in the UK. Thank everyone for taking the time to listen in. And if you haven't already, subscribe to the Boxing Source Radio Show that we post here once a week. And be sure to just check us out on social media through Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And we also do have a YouTube channel. But until next time, I'm out. Peace.